Welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub, the podcast. I'm Ray. I've just got a couple of items of housekeeping I want to run through with you first, folks. The first thing is, obviously, on the back of our episode number 11 about remote working, we appreciate at Leaders and Managers Hub that over the next coming weeks and months, people are going to find themselves temporarily socially isolated, either because they've been identified as being in a vulnerable group and need to self-isolate to protect themselves, or they have started to demonstrate symptoms or even be diagnosed with the COVID-19 virus and need to self-isolate to protect other people. In either case, and also for those people who are working remotely and working from home who wouldn't necessarily be used to it, at Leaders and Managers Hub, we really appreciate the psychological challenges that this can and will pose on some people out there. And for that very reason, we'd like to do something that's in our gift to do. That being, we use Zoom to remotely record our podcasts. It's a software package that's a bit like Skype. What we'd like to do, if people express an interest, is we would look to hold a regular conference call. Now, this isn't like a telephone conference call. It's done over the internet. It doesn't cost you anything, so you're not dialing into anything. All that would happen is you would express an interest to us. You'd be included on the invitation. There'd be a link within that invitation. You click on it. When you first use it, you just have to download the Zoom app on your laptop or tablet or device that you're using. Once you've got that, it's free. Once you've got that, you'll be able to access all of that content. We don't necessarily run it as a video to save on bandwidth, because bandwidth is going to become a challenge to us folks. So we turn the video off, and the reality is you don't even have to speak if you don't want to. You can just listen. It's all about just giving people that little bit of human contact, and sometimes it can become a little bit disorientating when you're locked away. It's easy to forget that the world is still turning outside and stuff. So it would just be an opportunity to touch base with people out there in the world and just share some perspectives. In terms of what we might talk about, that would really be down to demand and what people are interested to talk about. We may discuss some of the themes that we've already taken up on some of the podcasts, or we might discuss stuff that we haven't yet tackled before. Initially, it would be myself that would be running the calls, but if anybody wants to volunteer to host them as well, not quite sure how it will work with numbers. I think the ideal would be probably no more than 10 in any one session. But listen, we will react to demand and we'll do the very, very best we can to support people with the time and everything that we have available to us. So if you'd be interested in being part of something like that, I encourage you to get in contact with us. You can email us at info@campionconsultants.uk. That's info@campionconsultants.uk. If you send us an email expressing interest, we'll add you to the distribution list. We won't share your email with other people, and you'll get the invites when they come out, and then it'll be entirely up to you whether you want to access that call or not. So that's that. So on to episode 12. So we've called this the marketing question. Originally, the working title for it was "While I Have an Arse in My Trousers." Unfortunately, the anecdote behind that didn't make it into the edit, so it didn't seem appropriate to use that as the title. So we've called it the marketing question. Now, it really was borne out by a conversation that we'd had with Gary some weeks ago, and he was sharing with us an experience that he'd had while in Amsterdam, where he'd interacted with some companies who did things slightly differently. And so last weekend, when we sat down to record episode 11, we also got on to talking about the marketing question. I was particularly interested with Lisa and Gary because obviously Gary still works in marketing, and that's very much one of his core passions at the moment. Lisa has worked in marketing, and as part of her role at the workshop, she needs to re-engage with that again. So they're both very experienced people, and I was really, really keen to hear their perspectives and understand what their thoughts were. So we hope that you enjoy it. And we hope that you, if you want to interact with us, you can email us at podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. We want to hear your stories, especially now at the moment, folks. We are the Leaders and Managers Hub. We are here for you. Do not, under any circumstances, allow yourself to be isolated entirely. We will be here for you as much as it is humanly possible to be. So here we are with episode 12, the marketing question. We hope you enjoy. It's just so incredible. Gotta have it, can't let it go. If you don't try, you'll never know that this is incredible. Now have you ever wondered how the best did it? They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the love that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion. Gary, some weeks ago, you were sharing an experience you'd had where you'd gone to Amsterdam to do some work, and you were talking about some companies that you'd come across over there who had a very clear sense of who they were, why they were, etc., etc., and they seemed to have a culture of wanting to. What they did demonstrated why they were and what they believed, and they very much held themselves and others to account for what they wanted. Now, my experience of seeing things, and I am, you know, I do study people like Simon Sinek and people like that, as you've probably gathered by now, whose effort around marketing is very much that if you just want to have a one-off transaction, or you want to immediately try and target the middle of the curve, the early majority and late majority, that so often organizations end up telling you about their product, how financially competitive it is, all its bells and whistles and all that sort of thing. And that's fine, because that appeals to a certain part of our brain, the neocortex, which is very good at processing data and separating out, you know, the different price points and features of a particular product. But actually, as human beings, that's not where our decision making happens. That's where the rationalization of our decisions happens. Our decisions actually happen in the limbic brain, which has no capacity for language, but it controls all of our emotions, and it controls all of our feelings, and it controls all of our decision making. And in my experience, most organizations don't try to appeal to that part of my brain. They try to inundate me with features and price and everything else. And that does drive a decision. So if that's the only information I've given, then I will make a decision based on that information, and I'll choose one product over another. But actually, what really drives my decision making is if I am engaged on an emotional level with something, whether that's because the product that they're offering speaks to me in terms of what I believe about myself and what I want to portray to the wider world, or their ethos and the ethics behind the organization, the backstory, the reason why the company exists. Not, I'm not talking about making money. That's a result. That's what everybody's after, but actually truly why the organization exists. And if I look at, for example, if you look at clothes branding, a lot of people will buy a particular brand because they want to tell the world something about themselves. And they will buy that brand, it won't be the cheapest, and it might not even be the best, but they'll buy it because it tells the world something about them. They believe what that brand believes. You two guys are marketing people. Your background is marketing. You work in marketing. And so I'm really going to throw the floor open to you guys. do organizations effectively market, or is there, do we need to change the game in terms of actually telling people why we are and then using how, what we do and how we do it to reinforce our beliefs? Floor is open, people.
Nice easy one to open with.
Thanks for that. Where to start, really? I think it's, I've got really different experiences in marketing through all the jobs I've had. So I think some were very, years ago when I worked for the colleges, it was quite target driven, because we had to get numbers in to meet funding. So it was all about getting bums on seats and different numbers of seats in different classrooms, depending on the subject. And that really all came down to kind of the what value was put on those students, whether they were a younger student or an adult learner. That was all really affected, and that all came down to money. So I think then it was just about, it was about selling what we had. It was, there wasn't much care about it.
So would you say, Lisa, that your service, your product was a commodity?
Yeah, I think especially in something like education, further education, which is what I was in, they had to go and do something. That's how they were made to feel, for lots of different reasons, whether it was something their parents felt they should do. But generally, they had to leave school and go and do something. And if it wasn't working, and this is sort of 20 years ago, so you did have more of an option then, whether you at 16, whether you worked or not. It's very different now. But I think, yeah, there was a big thing of you've got to go and do something, so just pick a course. And I think what my experience was, I met lecturers that really did care about the people that were on their course, and they wanted to make sure that it was right for them and that they were going to achieve. I think there were other courses that they would have quite happily taken anybody onto if it filled a seat and they could tick the boxes, which isn't great, but for some it worked and others wouldn't, because they would just end up leaving and either not doing anything or they'd go on to something else. But you also had the total opposite of young people that, yeah, they really did want to do what they wanted to do. And then it would come down to other things like location and stuff that would all influence their decision. But I don't think there's ever any real story in education that would have been sold to them to, as a reason to come to that particular place.
So perhaps a marketing message from that organization would have been, we have a wide range of courses. We deliver courses in beautiful facilities, and you know, we have an aspirational culture within the learning facility. Come on one of our courses.
Yeah.
Whereas where they might have started from was, we believe in the advancement of every individual and inspiring every student to achieve their potential. We do that by providing beautiful facilities where learning is at the center of everything we do. We have fantastic courses. Come and learn with us. It's the same message, but as Simon Sinek would say, the first message was from the outside in.
Yeah.
The second message was from the inside out. Because if you, whatever your organization is, if you truly understand why you exist, then that is really the hook. Because if you communicate that effectively, you will appeal to the part of the brain that manages emotion and feelings and makes decisions. And then the how and the what you do is the rationale for the neocortex to rationalize your decision.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it was different when I worked in lettings for 6 years. I think I was lucky to have worked with a really good agent. But very much the marketing from them was about the service they provided and how that was going to help people. So it gave people a reason to buy into something because it was going to help them. And we very much marketed about how we help them as people, whether, especially for a landlord, it's very much, this is what we can do for you, this is what we're going to be able to do for you because we're really good at it. And that's what people would buy into, and they'd buy into the story of, especially the owners, because they were the ones with years of experience in the industry. And it was that story that we would sell rather than the fact we'd got properties. Like, we might not have any properties available at that point, but people would still want to come to us and were then on waiting lists for properties to become available because they bought into the company rather than...
They believed what you believed.
Yeah. So I think I've had really different experiences. More recently, especially in this job, I'm kind of finding that out at the moment. Marketing's something I've got to get my teeth stuck into and do more of, but I've also kind of been given a platform that I can start from scratch, that there hasn't really been anything set in stone before. So I'm really getting to go out and speak to the people that are with us at the moment to find out why are they at the workshop? What is it that's important to them? And kind of build the marketing from that. So that's quite exciting. It's
very interesting for organizations to truly try and investigate why their customers are their customers. And also then extrapolating that further out. Why are their employees? And more often than not, the answer is the same. So if you're an organization that commodifies what you do, and it's all about price and benefits, then that is probably the same reason why your people are your people. But if you're not competing on that level, if actually what you're doing is you're offering up why you exist, and people are your customers because they believe what you believe, and people are your employees because they believe what you believe, then actually what that creates is loyalty. Because if people are loyal to you as a brand or whatever, quite often they will buy your products and services. They will work for you, not because you're the cheapest and probably not, you're not even the most convenient, but because they believe what you believe. They share that common belief. And I think that's going to become more and more important. But Gary, from your perspective, as somebody who's very passionate about storytelling in marketing, give us a little bit of your experience.
So you asked the question, Ray, you know, are businesses marketing well? And if it's a yes, no answer, then the answer is no. On the whole, many businesses are not. And it does touch on what both you and Lisa were saying. I think too many businesses have marketing which is focused around themselves and the kind of facts of their history and what they do, and we're this. So imagine if you're, you know, having a conversation with your friends down the pub or in the cafe, and there's one in the group who just goes on and says, well, I do this, I've done this, and they never ask, and how about you? They're not going to be in that group very long. and I think having that focus on, you know, the client, the customer, the prospect, your tribe, your audience, and really trying to understand what it is they're looking for and what's going on in their world right now is super important, because that's what people are looking for. They've got a challenge, they've got a problem, an issue. And if they don't realise it at some point, they'll realise it. It's a bit like what we've been talking about with the coronavirus and COVID-19. People are aware of it, and then they're even more aware of it. And now people are looking for solutions around it. And just think there's a tendency to market towards the logical left side of the brain. There's too much jargon still. There's too much same sounding language on websites and in marketing and in emails. I was just talking with someone last week who wanted some feedback on an email, And the main feedback was, A, the subject line, nobody's going to open that, and B, when they did look at it, they'd just think this could come from any consultancy company. Anybody could have said this. And I think if you're in that situation, like you were talking earlier, Ray, about price, you know, there's always somebody who can undercut you on price. And if you're just sounding the same as anybody else, then you're not really giving people an opportunity to see what's different about you and why they should invest in you rather than somebody else.
I mean, like for me as a non-marketing person, but I only say that because I've not worked in something that is clearly defined as marketing, but everything's marketing really. I actually sign up to the thought that you should never put your customers first. As an organization, you should put your people first. Because if you put your people first and your people, you can identify why your people are your people, then in terms of your initial marketing offer, you just need to articulate why our people are our people. Because that is, so just taking a step back. So you have the law of diffusion of innovation, which is a bell curve. And at the very front of it, the first 2.5% are your innovators. Then you have your next sort of 8-9% are your early adopters. Early adopters, by the way, are people who queued up for 6 hours to buy the first iPhone when they could have walked in and bought one off the shelf a few days later. They're the people that bought 30,000 pound flat screen TVs when they first came out, when the technology was awful, because their belief and their drive is to be the first. You then have the early majority and the late majority, which are the largest portion of the bell curve. And then at the end, you have the last sort of 2.5%, which are the laggards. Laggards are people who they don't get it. They don't want to get it. They never will get it. They're not interested. But the early and late majority, they are the people who generally make decisions based on price point, features, etc., etc. Unless they see the innovators and the early adopters as taking on board that product or service, they'll never be the first in the line. They'll always wait to see somebody else take it on first. And a lot of organizations market the middle of the curve. So they're literally just trying to market based on price, features, etc. They don't actually have a true differentiating proposition. The most successful organizations, and a lot of people use Apple as an example. When Apple brought Apple's reason for being is to completely turn the world on its head. And what they do reinforces that belief. So, for example, when they brought out the iPod, now a lot of our younger listeners are probably going, what's an iPod? It was the very first sort of iterations of an MP3 player before you could get all this on a mobile phone. Apple weren't the first to produce an MP3 player. Actually, the first company to produce one was Creative. Creative were responsible for the Sound Blaster product, which gave PCs the ability to play sound. They were actually much more, all the market conditions were right for them. They had the technology, they were in that field, they had the money. There was absolutely no reason why they shouldn't lead the market. They had the early jump on everybody else. In fact, Apple didn't release the iPod until 22 months after the Creative Zen came out. But the way they marketed it was, Creative talked about a 5 megabyte or 5 gigabyte MP3 player. Apple talked about 1,000 songs in your pocket. And at the time, bearing in mind that the music industry was all around, if you needed music, you had to buy an album. The MP3 technology, the digital technology had just come in. Apple didn't invent that. Apple didn't invent the MP3 player. But what they said was, we will give you 1,000 songs in your pocket. You don't have to carry around a Sony Walkman, which, you know, or Discman, which, you know, you can only use what cassettes or tapes or discs you have that you can physically carry with you. We will turn the world on its head and we will give you 1,000 songs in your pocket. That was why people bought iPods. Then they said, well, we do a 16 gig version and a 32 gig version. That's where the decision needed to be made. But the decision to buy the Apple iPod over the Creative Zen had already been made because people believed what Apple believed. They sold them a dream to have 1,000 songs in their pocket, not a dream to have a 5 gigabit MP3 player in their pocket. And that for me seems very interesting. How they approach and how they communicate through marketing what it is, why they do what they do, reinforced by what they do and how they do it. Because I don't think a lot of people rationally would say that, for example, the Mac is the best computer. In fact, even with the iPod, you know, it was plagued with technological issues, battery life, replacing the battery. In a lot of senses, it just died. I had an iPod. It just died over time. The Creative Zen was a much more robust, technologically better product. But people didn't buy the Creative Zen. They bought the iPod. And you've got to try and wonder why that is. And I do think there's a lot in it that says that if you appeal to the emotional feeling and decision-making part of the brain and then support that with the information to rationalize that decision, it's an awful lot easier to target a mass market. And you get that tipping point where you've got your early adopters and your innovators are on board with you just because they've done that for themselves. And the early and late majority see that movement and go, hey, I want a part of that.
Well, this is the power of story. I mean, Apple's is a classic case of, you know, you're presenting people with a vision with extreme clarity. As you say, you're painting that picture of 1,000 songs in your pocket, which everybody can readily identify with. Whereas if you're just talking about features or some sort of technical aspect, that's not really what people are buying for. This is something that's aspirational, it's cool, it's new, and it's a different way of thinking about music and how you can have that wherever you go. And it's obviously people are still buying Apple. I mean, Apple doesn't even have a huge share of the market, but it has really loyal fans. There's very few people who are switching from Apple products to something else.
Everything they do, Gary, is about, because people aren't buying from Apple because they want to buy from Apple. They're buying from Apple. They're doing it for themselves. They're not doing it for Apple's benefit. They're doing it for themselves because it says something about them. And
absolutely.
And even down to like on the Mac, when you open the Mac up, the Apple logo on the Mac is clear and in the right position for everybody else to see that you're a Mac user. For a lot of other computer manufacturers, the logo actually faces the user. So when you open it up, it's actually upside down to the rest of the world. It's little things like that that make all the difference. Another example is detergents, washing detergents. You know, make your whites whiter and your colors brighter. And when they actually, you know, for years, that was how the detergent market was competing against each other to say, you know, we make it whiter because we have this additive and that additive. Because when they did the market research, people said they wanted their clothes to be cleaner. Actually, when they looked at human behavior, when people took their clothes out of the machine, they didn't hold it up to the light to see if their colors were brighter or if their whites were whiter. the first thing they did was they smelled it, and it smelt clean. So actually what the detergent companies realized was, it wasn't, everybody expected detergent to clean your clothes. That's the whole purpose of a detergent. But actually what drove the behavior was that people wanted to feel clean and smell clean. They didn't want to see demonstrable evidence that things were whiter or brighter. They wanted to feel that it was cleaner. And that completely tipped the industry.
Well, I think with any solution or offering, you're not just tackling the surface or external problem or challenge someone is facing, as you've said with the examples you've mentioned, there's something bigger than that. So there's that internal feeling of just that satisfaction of having clean washing and fresh smelling laundry, and then there's that wider sense of how that makes you feel. You know, when you put on new clothes or fresh clothes, it makes you feel good.
Yeah. And like British Airways is another classic example. Rationally, why would you ever fly with British Airways? They're often very expensive compared to their competitors. And quite often, they're not the most convenient airline to fly with. But people fly with British Airways because they believe in what British Airways believes. They believe in that higher standard of behavior. They fly British Airways because they want to be able to tell people that they fly British Airways. Whether it's more expensive or more inconvenient to fly with them, they want to be able to say to their people, we fly BA. And that's very important. Harley Davidson as well. People will buy a product from Harley Davidson. Now, at one point, it took a year. Their pre-orders, you'd have to order your Harley Davidson motorcycle a year before you would actually get it. They've brought that down to 6 months. But in theory, that's very bad customer service. But it doesn't stop people buying Harley Davidsons and buying Harley Davidson branded products and even tattooing Harley Davidson's logo on their bodies, because it speaks to them. It's an opportunity for those individuals to tell the world something about them, because they believe what Harley Davidson believe. And so my question to you, Gary, as somebody who's actively involved in marketing day to day, how often do you get to have that sort of a conversation with organizations?
Well, I have conversations about this every time I'm talking with them, really, because that's my approach. It's a story-based approach, and using my journalism background, I'm just really looking, what's the story here? And the way you do that is just by asking lots of questions, and part of that is around, I think there are a number of key questions, really. It's like, who are you? What do you do? How do you do it? Who do you help? How do you help them? What makes you different? And why should people buy from you rather than somebody else? Those are fundamental questions, I think, for any business, whether you're a solopreneur, small team of four or five, or whether you've got 10,000 in your operation. Those are core questions. And going back to the very start of all this, when you're talking about the Amsterdam event, it's also about the person's or company's values and principles, their way of not just doing, it's their way of being. And that's really what struck me, was that you had these two companies talking about themselves. They were, collaborating together as partners. And they said what really brought them together was values. They could see in each other's people, by the way they were talking and acting and behaving, we really like these people. And they shared, some core values, which allowed them to say, yes, we are about innovation, and we are about customer first. But also, it's things like, we're not going to play safe. So they had this trust and connection, which allowed them to discuss things in a robust way and challenge each other in a positive way. So, you know, can we do this better? Can we serve our clients and the market better? And you wouldn't have to have gone into their office and looked on the wall and, you know, seen a shopping list or menu of these are our values. You could have just told just by observing. And I think that's a really powerful thing. And I know a few years ago when I was working with a company that was working with an email marketing company that's very well known globally, it was the same thing there. They had this list of some core values, but you could see from, you know, the CEO and the other sort of C-suite team, they all clearly entirely bought into this set of values and spoke and behaved in those ways. And it was just really refreshing and empowering to see, you know, this just kind of being who you are. And that's a really strong brand point, but also in terms of your connections and relationships and the type of business that you do and who you attract.
And if you're competing, if your products and services, and by extension your people, are seen as commodities and you're dealing purely on price and features, that can be incredibly stressful for an organization because you're constantly trying to create that differentiating proposition with your competitors. Whereas if as an organization you serve a higher purpose and you're and what your marketing is just about articulating that story to people, then your only real competition is within yourself to say, have we created the culture which allows people to truly innovate? I mean, if we go back to the Apple example again, and I purely use Apple because they're a well-known and good example of this. If you look at the range of products that Apple do, from computers to MP3 players to DVRs to whatever it might be, actually probably in any one of those individual markets, they're probably not the best. They're probably not the cheapest. They're not even the owner of the biggest share of the market. But what they're able to do consistently is to re-achieve their success. So with everything they bring out, they re-achieve their success. For example, they say they want to change the way the world operates. So for years, the music industry was a network of people. It was sewn up. You know, the record labels had it all sewn up with royalties and everything else. And the only way you could access music was at home with your record player or your tape player or on the radio. Apple said, no. We're going to give music to people so they can access it anywhere. And the majority of music now is accessed actually outside of the home. And what they did was they produced iTunes and they produced their iPod and ultimately their iPhone, which all served to demonstrate their belief that actually we're just going to challenge the status quo all the time. The same with their Mac offering. So in any one category, they're not the best, they're not the cheapest, but they are one of the most successful time and time and time again. Whereas with a lot of other organizations, things come and go. You know, when once upon a time, Nokia were the preeminent mobile phone provider around the world. Most of the most used common handsets were Nokia handsets. When the smartphone technology came out and Apple led the charge by saying, actually, it's not down to the mobile phone provider to say what we will provide. It's down to the phone manufacturer to tell the network provider what they will provide in terms of the phone's capability. And they came out with smartphones. Nokia completely missed the curve because they were relying on data that said X number of millions of people are buying Nokia handsets. They weren't doing the research to say, what do people actually want? You know, do they want more? They were convinced that people wanted more buttons and they wanted, you know, more features and stuff. When the iPhone was launched, it had less features than the average, and it only had one button. But it's just incredibly interesting to me, because I personally love stories, and I love to hear why organizations are the way they are. And I think actually with all sorts of things, and not just climate change, I think individuals and organizations are going to be looking more closely at the ethics and the why of organizations. And that's going to dictate everything from pension funds to the coffee you buy. You know, are you, the coffee you're providing me, is it ethically sourced? Is it like free trade, et cetera, et cetera? The pension fund that you're enrolling me in, what organizations do they invest in? Do they invest in green technology, or do they invest in carbon technology or tobacco firms or whatever it might be? Because people are now starting to challenge, I don't want to be associated with that because I don't believe in smoking or carbon fossil fuel burning or whatever it might be. And so my question again, back to you two guys, is how do organizations start to get their head around that changing landscape, that changing environment?
It's got to start with content, I think. It's changing the content that you've got so that it becomes more story-based. I think people are just becoming less susceptible to the promises that salespeople make and the advertising that's put in front of them. And probably try and ignore some of that more of the time, which is where I think if people to invest in their brand's narrative and working out what their story is, if they're not quite sure what it is, then yeah, I think that's what we need to be doing more of.
Well, let me boil the question down a little bit more then. Is the future of marketing less about manipulation and more about inspiration?
I'd like to think so.
Well, I mean, there's still manipulation and, you know, persuasion marketing going on. You'll see that, you know, on the TV, in the newspapers, online, and in certain spheres. You know, you're going to see more of that than in others, just because, again, it's people will do what they feel they, you know, can get away with, and all the, if you like, sort of the sort of old school marketing is, you know, just, you know, you
still
sell hard and it's aggressive, and you kind of be you know, persistent and kind of bludgeon people a little bit. That's at one extreme end, and then you've got the, you know, more sophisticated marketing, which I think, you know, you'll already will have seen, you know, story-based marketing. It's been around for quite some time, really, but you can see, I mean, I remember the old coffee ads where there was kind of the sort of relationship between two people that kind of formed, and that almost became a little mini soap opera. You've got, you know, things like, you know, compare the market, that, and the story of the meerkat. That's a really, really good example. But I think in terms of what, you know, what companies can do and how businesses can improve their marketing, I would say really first thing is just stop and review everything you're doing, and ask yourself the, you know, these core questions about, you know, do you actually understand who you are and what you do and what you actually do for people? You know, it's then, you know, it's also for your products and services, it's understanding those, you know, features and benefits are still important, but it's, you know, what is this giving people, and, you know, what in essence, I think it's part of it is that often there's a desire to sort of say too much, whereas it's how can you distill that into single sentences or single words even. So there should be probably some, you know, thinking around that, but really just asking yourself quite deep questions. I mean, that's what I use with the people that I'm working with, and I'm really upfront about it. I say, there's a ton of questions here. You may not be able to answer them all. However, these are the type of questions that can allow you to come up with some useful pieces for your marketing, perhaps some language or some slogans or potential taglines, but also so that you can actually express in, you know, a single sentence or paragraph exactly what it is you do and who you do it for.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about those particular adverts, because again, the other ones like the old OXO adverts and stuff, and yeah, they all created a story. They all got your buy-in. So they didn't necessarily spend that advert talking about coffee. It was a feature, but they didn't talk about coffee and what that coffee would do for you. It was just, it was the story that they were trying to get you to buy into. I think these days it's a lot of that comes on Instagram. There's quite a few people I follow. And they use the Instagram stories to try and do that now, which is much shorter, but in themselves, they become a bit of a mini series. And the really good ones, which I suppose is people I follow and look out for, which I haven't quite realised, but I suppose it's because I've bought into wanting to know more about them. So, for example, there's a local one, the Quartermasters for Folkestone, but he does a story every day, sometimes a few. But you really learn about his brand and what he's all about and what he can offer. So all of that marketing's there. I know exactly what he does, but the stories haven't been about that. There's lots of other stuff that goes on, but you just kind of in the background, you're learning that he does printing and that he sells local artwork and all that sort of stuff.
I think as well, for me, just to touch on authenticity as well, that if a business, if an organization, or for that matter, an individual truly knows why they do what they do, then actually their ability to tell that story and put that out there is, I'm trying to think of the right words for it. It's a much more infectious sort of thing. I understand what you mean about the Quartermaster, because the Quartermaster certainly gives you a sense that authentically, you know, they're interested in you know, promoting the arts and promoting artists and creativity and everything else. And one of the ways they do that is with the products that they provide. But the message they put out is more about what they believe. And so people buy into that.
Yeah, and what you get when you visit the shop is no different to what you see online, which is key. I think sometimes in marketing, we think it can all be quite false and you don't always necessarily believe or buy into what you're being shown. But I think places like that, you sort of go in and actually the conversation you'd have with Colin, who owns it, is no different to what you see him put out on Instagram. It's a real sort of honest approach of way of doing it, I think.
And I think as well with like Instagram influencers and celebrity endorsements and stuff, they absolutely do work. There's no doubt about it. If you want to drive a one-off purchase decision, then that works for a lot of people. But if you want to actually drive long-term loyalty and actually have people buying your products, but your products might be more expensive and more inconvenient to access, but they still buy them, then whoever you use as a celebrity endorsement or an Instagram influencer, there needs to be an authenticity there, because at a very deep level, humans are very, very good at figuring out whether a message is authentic or not, because we feel it. We hear what they're saying. It all sounds right. Something just doesn't feel right about it. And that's a powerful thing to understand. And so I think authenticity in what you tell people about yourself and your products and services is very important want to drive long-term brand loyalty.
Yeah. I think what would be really good is anyone listening to tell us about somebody or well, it could be a business as well, but anyone that they've perhaps read stuff about that they would like to meet to know whether it's really true or not.
Yeah.
So I've got several celebrities that I've, I don't know if admire is the right word, but I suppose people that I've sort of read books of or follow their blog posts, and you really like what they put out there about themselves or their business. And yeah, I've got a bit of a list now of people that I think, actually, I'd really like to meet you and just see if you're the same as what you put out there, or whether it is just a bit of a marketing thing and
doing
you're just
the money.
Yeah, exactly that.
Well, if you do make contact with any of those celebrities, Lisa, and you want to get them on the podcast, you know, we're an open family here.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, Karen Brady's one of them.
Okay.
Definitely. So we'll put it out there. You never know who might be listening that might know them.
Yeah, you've just upset a whole lot of West Ham supporters now.
Yeah. But no, she's one of
and
them.
And Sir Alan. Or Lord Sugar now.
Well, this is it. It's even people like that. And you hear like other people's stories that have met these people. And you just think, oh, is it? I suppose it's knowing that it's kind of genuine. Because I've definitely bought into their stories. Susie Marr is another one who runs the Tropic Skincare. So, I think there's probably many more I could add to the list. But, yeah, it'd be interesting. Or even to hear from people that have perhaps had that thought and then met them to see what the result was. Mm. Whether they think, no, they were totally genuine and that's exactly how they are. Or whether it was, really disappointed.
I'd also be interested to hear from people who might be interested in discovering if they're maybe sitting there thinking, oh, you know what? I actually don't know why I do what I do.
Yeah.
There are a number of methods, and I've been doing this a lot with people over the last few years. It's actually quite a straightforward process of discovery to actually understand, to get to the point where people understand why they do what they do. And actually, interestingly, Gary, as well, it's all around stories. And so if anybody's interested in going on that journey of exploration, get in touch with us again, podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com, because we have a network of people who are very, very good facilitators in taking people through that process. And, you know, we can share details and put people in contact with people. But also, if anybody has been on a journey of discovery and suddenly took stock of, right, well, this is what I've been doing and how I've been doing it for years, but I never actually understood what drove me, what drove my behavior. And they've been through that process and they've figured that out and they know their why. We'd love to hear from you too, because that would be really interesting. Gary, have you anything you particularly want to say about, you know, the use of influencers and the use of celebrity endorsement and authenticity and that sort of thing?
Well, of course, we do live in a world of celebrity and social media, so there's no getting away from that. And I think if brands and companies, you know, want to go down that route, that's all fine. I think people, it is what it is. And if they want to use George Clooney to, you know, sell coffee or coffee machines, you know, I think it's all fine.
You?
Yeah, well, no, I think it should work for them, because obviously they're paying these people, good money for it. So they're obviously, you know, expecting a return on it. So that's part of their, strategic thinking and so on. Obviously, not everyone's in a position to do that, but I'd actually be sort of saying, you know, to businesses and, you know, particularly those perhaps who are on a tighter budget, is think about making the prospect, the client, the customer, make them the celebrity, make them the hero of your story, and you will start to see different and better results. But it is, you know, it's back down to the basics of it. You know, the clarity of message, clarity wins over everything. A confused buyer, a confused mind rarely buys. It's the consistency. So again, what we're talking about is, you know, are your values just something you stick on a wall, or is this something that comes across in your marketing and how you're presenting yourself? And are you using the right channels online, offline to get your message across? And then there's conversion. If you've already got something up and running, are you actually monitoring it, measuring it, and seeing how you can tweak it to improve it? You know, if you could get an extra 2, 5, or 10% improvement, what would that mean for your bottom line?
Yeah. So there we are, folks, the marketing question. Email us, podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. We hope that you were able to work with us with the volume and the audio quality. We are recording over Zoom at the moment, so it is bringing with it some challenges. And just to go back to what I said at the start, with regards to the Zoom call for people who are isolated or feeling a little bit isolated, the plan is that we will roll out the first one on Monday evening at 8 o'clock in the evening. So we will be putting out notifications on the Campion Consultants Facebook page and on the website, www.campionconsultants.uk. So please have a look on there. And if you are interested, please email us info@campionconsultants.uk and we will get you on the invite for that meeting. And if you know of anybody who is in self-isolation and you think that they would benefit from just hearing a friendly voice and getting together and just talking around some topics, then please share with them the information. Ask them to get in touch with us and we'll get them on the invite as well. We look forward to you speaking to you very soon, and have a good week. Look after yourselves and look out for each other.
They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine.